When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just feel like I've been around the block, ripping up fantasy stock, working around the clock. Look at the view from the top. Researching rookies a lot? No, I just be listening to pods. Yeah, one in particular, I'm just a messenger. Let me just pass on the rock. Browning, Brunning, Bruning, pronouncing ain't what he's doing. What he's doing is not losing, but infusing you with new things. And there's Dennis the Bennett. Yeah, the man is a menace. Yeah, building a dynasty, some of the finest things. Promise you, you won't regret it. Sly as a fox, cultured in pop, give him his props. Here is a thought, here is a box, and you cannot compare them at all, so don't even try. Careful with the news, but when you use a take, I take up Tony Fire, I mean Dyer, because anyone else is a huge mistake. Whoa, fantasy round table, fantasy round table. Yeah, fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Hey, fantasy round table, fantasy round table. Woo, fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Go.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Football Roundtable Podcast, a rare Tuesday episode. It's been a while since we've done a Tuesday show, but Matt is here with me. I had to get some things done yesterday, so we had to cut yesterday's show a little bit short. So for today, we're going to finish up the afternoon games, the Sunday night football game, Monday night football game, and then what else? Oh, we're doing Pop Culture Corner. We're going to talk a little Yellowstone. I did not know until recently that Matt was a big fan of the show, as am I. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We will save talking Hawkeye until next week so that both of us will get a chance to watch it at some point in time tomorrow. So before we get into all of that, Matt, how you doing on this amazing Tuesday?
Doing okay. My wife continues her hot streak of calling me just as we're starting the show, even though I've told her what I'm doing. But last day in the office, my new Christmas shirt came. I wore the Bailey Brothers Savings and Loan shirt today, so that was a little fun. You catch the people that don't know what that's from.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I don't know that I know what that's from. I'm trying to think, but I cannot.
It's A Wonderful Life. It probably helps because it says Bailey Brothers Savings and Loan, Bedford Falls, New York.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't think that I've ever actually seen that movie. I've not watched a lot of Christmas movies. I don't know why. I like the time of year. I've never really watched a lot of Christmas movies. I've seen Santa. Is it Santa Claus with Tim Allen?
Santa Claus. Yep.
Yeah, I've seen like the first one.
Did you know there's three of those?
I did not. I knew that, but I've not seen all three of them. I've seen the one. So yeah, big fan though. Big fan. But I'm sure a lot of people have not come here to listen to us talk about Santa Claus. I will say that we are proud to be part of the Pigskin Podcast Network. You can find them at PigskinPodNet on Twitter, or you can search the hashtag TPPN. We all tag that as we go live. A ton of great podcasts, not just us, other fantasy football podcasts, baseball, hockey, soccer, basketball. They've got it all. Check that out for any of your sporting needs. So let's jump into it, Matt, and finish up the rest of these breakdowns for week 11. And we're going to start with the 49ers as they beat the Jaguars 32-10 yesterday. They get the big win. Are we starting to get more encouraged here by Brandon Ayuk's usage?
Yeah, I mean, he had seven targets, actually led the team there. Debo Samuel ends up having a pretty good day because he was basically like their primary rusher. Ayuk was also incredibly efficient, caught all seven targets, 85 yards and a touchdown. We've seen a tick up. I think Jimmy G's hot streak has been good for Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and George Kittle. They've all kind of come back, and that's made this 49ers offense look like it has a little bit of a different dimension. I am starting to believe in Ayuk a little bit more. I like this matchup this week. They're playing the Vikings. I think that those are two teams that have clawed their way back in. That could be a fun offensive game.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy that we all thought was going to be like the lead receiver on that team, it's good to see him finally getting involved there. I mean, Trey Sermon got 10 carries as well in this game, so that was, I guess, somewhat exciting to see, although I imagine Elijah Mitchell is going to be back pretty soon. So that probably
supposed to be back this week.
Yeah, so that probably relegates Sermon right back to the bench where he came. But it was definitely fun to see him. Yeah, I mean, the bad thing, I think, for Ayuk is Debo has just looked so good that I kind of feel like it's going to cap what Ayuk can do this year and probably moving forward, because I don't think Debo's going anywhere. Unless he gets injured, which obviously we do not hope for that, but unless he gets injured, I think, yeah, Ayuk's going to be second or third fiddle for the most part, because Kittle was involved a little bit there, got the touchdown. So, yeah, I'm excited that he's getting more and more touches and more and more looks, because I think it means that Kyle Shanahan is starting to trust him more and more, right? So it's good for us who have Ayuk, and we're expecting him to have a big year. Is there a Jaguar that you trust at all for fantasy this season?
No, you know, I saw some LaVisca Chenault stands seemingly getting excited. It's kind of a sad state of affairs when catching 5 passes for 50 yards is enough to get you excited. I was a little bit, on the Dan Arnold train. Dude didn't get a single target this week, so that was a little rough. James Robinson scores a touchdown, which helps his day look a little bit better, but really only 12 carries, 29 yards. We've talked about Trevor Lawrence, 158 yards passing. He didn't throw any interceptions, only had 23 yards rushing. There just isn't enough in this Jaguars offense to really even make you confident about one person, sadly.
Yeah, the James Robinson thing kind of sucked, because, I mean, I didn't get a chance to pay close attention to everything Sunday morning, but last I heard, he was not going to play, so I pulled him out of all my lineups, and I started Dante Foreman and a couple of them, so that was a little bit frustrating.
Not that big of a difference in the score, sadly.
Very true, very true. But it's definitely good to see him out there, especially dealing with the multiple injuries. Yeah, Dan Arnold, I think, is just – it's weird. And I think you still have to trust him, though, because of how bad tight end is. But, yeah, it's that part of it sucks. And I think a lot of teams are going to start scheming for him and James Robinson, because they're the best two players on that team, unfortunately, moving forward. Speaking of Dante Foreman, because we already talked to Texans, so we're not going to go back to them. Do you see that they released Adrian Peterson, which I think it just means better things for Dante Foreman. They just waived him.
Which is weird, because he led them in carries and rushing yardage last week. So, I'm tired of trying to figure out the Titans' backfield. Without Derrick Henry, it's a mystery. I would assume that means Jeremy McNichols is better to play. You know, and they have Hilliard for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe they're going to go sign our boy Phillip Lindsay, who also got released today by the Texans. So,
which is clearly the Texans are like all in on Rex Burkhead for reasons surpassing understanding.
Hey,
maybe they are trying to lose.
Yeah, he averages 2.2 yards a carry. That's exactly what you need for a team that's losing. The Bengals beat the Raiders here 32-13. Mixon comes up big. How important is he to the Bengals offense?
I think he's a really a difference maker. When Mixon is going good, he gives them another dimension, because they have those nice passing weapons, but you've got to be able to take some of the pressure off Joe Burrow. You've got to keep defenses honest. He helps them grind out the clock. I think that was a big thing for them last year when they didn't have Mixon. We had thought maybe Giovanni Bernard could step in and have a big role, and they never really were able to get anything going. I think having that strong presence just makes such a difference in the way the Bengals are able to play and compete.
Yeah, and I mean, props to him too for what he's doing, and all the fantasy managers who held on to him, because it has not looked great the past couple of years, but he's been on fire, and I do think it's a major part of that game. It allows that offense, I think, to be able to pass the ball more, because defenses can't just drop back in coverage. They have to respect him for what he's doing, not just in the run game, but also in the receiving game. So as long as he stays healthy, I think not only is he in for a good season, but it's going to help the Bengals offense stay on track and continue to have a good year. The Raiders lose again. Is the wind going out of the season?
Yeah, that's been the big problem the last 2 years. We've seen them start strong and kind of fade down the stretch. This year, it's a little more understandable. They lost their head coach. They've had a couple of big off-the-field blows with players, Henry Ruggs, Damon Arnette, that they've released. I admire the courage of going out there and trying to compete. I loved Derek Carr's attitude in that post-game press conference, just saying he's not good enough and they're not playing good enough to get it done. I appreciate all those things, but they are one of four teams that are 500 or better in the AFC West and one of 12 teams in the AFC that are 500 or better. That's just not going to be a recipe for any kind of an easy path. And they look lost right now. There's the Thursday, we'll touch it tomorrow, but that Thanksgiving Day slate is going to be fascinating. I think they said it's the first time all six teams are coming in off of losses. And the morning game, you know, Detroit and Chicago may be out of it, but that Cowboys, Raiders, and Saints, Bills at night, those are going to be four desperate teams coming in. And if the Raiders look like what they did on Sunday, I think even without Lamb and Cooper, they could be in trouble.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked a lot about on here. We really like the way that Derek Carr has handled a lot of the controversy, unfortunately, surrounding the Raiders this season. He's shown a lot of great leadership. I've been kind of rooting for him and the Raiders to get into the playoffs because of that. You know, last time the Raiders were in, it was because of him carrying that team the entire season and then unfortunately broke his leg. I believe it was 2 weeks before the playoffs and was not able to play in that, obviously. So I'd love to see him get back there, but it's not looking pretty right now. And then who knows what this team is going to be next year, because I would not be surprised if Mike Mayock is gone as well. It might have a whole new general manager, whole new head coach, and they may not want to keep Derek Carr there. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens with the Raiders in 2022 if they do not make the playoffs this year. The Cardinals, with their backup quarterback, beat the Seahawks 23-13. The Cardinals get a big win without Murray and Hopkins. Are they still the favorites in the NFC?
Yeah, you know, I think the fact that a lot of the NFC contenders have struggled during this stretch and kept them in a tight pack has really benefited the Cardinals, who needed time to get well. They've now made it to their bye week. I fully expect we're going to see at least Kyler Murray coming out of that in week 13. And they still have the best record in the NFC. So that's been a real blessing. They've been able to weather that storm. I have my questions about them in kind of clutch important games. I think we saw that in that game against Green Bay on Thursday night. It was an important test that gives you pause. But, you know, we keep talking about other teams being atop the NFC, and the Cardinals just keep winning and keep staying there record-wise.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give them props on the fact that they're winning without Murray and Hopkins. If it was one or the other, I think maybe you could make an argument for somebody else, but I mean, they've been good. They lost Watt 3 weeks ago, I think, at this point, maybe 4 weeks ago. Defense really hasn't lost much of a step. I mean, I really do think that they're probably the top seed in the NFC. I still think the Packers are close, but losing a game like they did to the Vikings this weekend is not great for them. So I think you have to say the Cardinals are the top. And you know, the one thing I think we can say for the Cardinals is they've really only had like one bad game. You know, the Cowboys, I think, is probably a team that's up there. They've fallen flat twice and in major ways in those games as well. So that's something to be a little bit concerned about for the Cowboys. It was another flat performance, though, for Wilson and the Seahawks. Should this be cause for concern?
Yeah, I think the Seahawks are done as a contender, even with how wide open the races are. They're 3-7 now. Russell Wilson has looked awful coming back from injury. Chris Carson is gone for the year. You know, I'll be curious how you feel. I actually think that this is giving credence to the fact this is Wilson's last season in Seattle. There were a lot of rumors about it last year. There seems to be a bad energy there, and this franchise is really kind of stuck in an untenable position right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've been saying that for a little bit now, especially the fact that the rumors keep coming out that he's going to ask for a trade in the offseason. I know he never really mentioned it. It was more like his agent that was like, oh no, Russ doesn't want to go anywhere. I feel, and you know, I said this about Pete Carroll, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, I think his time in Seattle has kind of come too. Like, I do think he's a great coach and he probably will get another job somewhere, but just feels like that team is not anywhere near what it needs to be. And I wonder how much of that is on him But yeah, I would not be surprised if Russell's gone. And I did not have this team making the playoffs anyways. It was the one team in the NFC West I had finishing last and not making the playoffs. And so far, even with the Russ coming back from the injury early, it looks like that's probably going to happen for them. Oh, probably the biggest letdown game of the weekend. We had a lot of high hopes for this one. The Chiefs beat the Cowboys 19-9. The Cowboys lose Lamb and struggle. They have two games now in the next 11 days. Can they win without their stars?
Yeah, and hopefully both Cooper and Lamb will be back for the second game. But the Cowboys, it's a real bummer because the Cowboys usually are really good on Thanksgiving Day at home. They like playing that game. And to be rolling out there without their top two receivers, it's also a concern. I think a bigger concern might be watching the status of Ezekiel Elliott and Tyron Smith, because it wasn't just the receivers that they lost. They lost pieces on the line. They couldn't get a running game going. And when Dallas isn't running well, that really spells some trouble. I thought their defense played pretty well. I mean, held them in there against a tough Kansas City team. It was a close game throughout, but it was definitely a huge fantasy bummer.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the defense believed to not allow Patrick Mahomes to get a passing touchdown is a big thing. Like, without that defense, there's a chance this game was going to be like the New England Patriots versus the Cleveland Browns a couple weeks ago in like a 41-7 game. It was not going to be pretty for the Cowboys. For Zeke, I think things are looking up. I saw a tweet earlier that he was a full participant in practice today, so that probably is good news for him moving forward, because they're going to likely have to lean on him a little bit with Cooper and Lamb for sure being out. The tweet also said Lamb is still in concussion protocol, so I doubt he plays.
Yeah. I think you were right. What they said was it's a 5-day process, so he won't have enough time to clear this week. And the reason that Sunday started a stretch of 3 games in 12 days for them, because they play on consecutive Thursday nights. So it's not a long layoff after Thanksgiving for Dallas.
Yeah, I think they've done that the past couple of years. I don't know why they do that to Dallas. I'm not even that big of a Cowboys fan, and even I'm like, that's kind of messed up that they continue to do this to the Dallas Cowboys. The Chiefs, though, win another tough game. But what do we think about this revitalized defense?
Yeah, and I think that's made a pretty big difference for Kansas City. We saw that the week prior. They kind of came out and held their own. I didn't even think they looked too bad against the Giants, but they need some kind of defense and some kind of defensive pressure, because it's clear that it was too much pressure on the offense to have to try to score 40 points a game. I think we've seen that at times be what's plagued Buffalo. As Kansas City has turned it around here, their offense is playing better, but it's that defense playing better, holding games closer, and giving them a chance that's made a big difference.
Yeah, and if that defense can continue to turn it around, we might see this Chiefs team be kind of what we were expecting them to be this year and what they've been the past couple seasons. What ended up being a really fun game, the news came out a little, I think it was Saturday, maybe it was really early Sunday morning, that Big Ben would play, which really kind of, you know, gave this game a little bit more excitement. And they drove down, made it a close game, but the Chargers end up getting away with the wins. Justin Herbert has a game-winning drive to win 41-37. The Steelers come up short, but show good fight. Is this the last run for Big Ben? And if so, what did the Steelers do in 2022?
Yeah, and I think this has come up a lot. He definitely looked better at times, I thought, on that Sunday night game, but he doesn't look like he's the same. I think there was questions about whether he was even going to come back this year. Eli Manning's been out for 2 full seasons. Rivers retired after last season. Those are the guys he was in a draft class with. I tend to think this is his last season, and I tend to think that what we've seen is they tried to pick up Dwayne Haskins to see if there was anything there. Clearly there isn't. I don't think Mason Rudolph is the answer. It's going to be some hard questions, because the Steelers have some good pieces on offense, but they're missing that linchpin piece. And I think also on Sunday night, we saw how important a couple of those big defenders. They were missing TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick, and they could not contain Eckler or anyone for the Chargers offense. So they're going to have to do something. And they're just good enough that they're not in a great position to draft that person unless without making some kind of a move.
Yeah, I mean, we saw on the defensive side of things, we saw how big that was for Joey Bosa to get cleared from COVID the night before and being able to play in that game helped out. The one thing I'll say for the Steelers is, I know that Austin would hate this, but there is a guy that I think would be really good in the system they tend to run for quarterbacks that I do think would fall to them, and that's Carson Strong out of Nevada. And there's a lot of people who like him to be a first-round pick. He's very much like Big Ben. He's kind of a statue back there. He's not outrunning anybody. But if they can improve that offensive line a little bit, I think with the weapons they have and Najee coming out of the backfield, he would not be that bad of a fit, and I do think he would fall in the first round. I've seen a lot of the mocks lately have not had him in the first round. There's enough people, at least that I respect when it comes to breaking down players, that believe he should be a first-round pick. Let's see here. On the Chargers side, they stand up tall and the offense looks sharp. Do you think that they can challenge the Chiefs for the AFC West?
Yeah, we've already seen them upend the Chiefs once this season. They're going to play again, and that'll make a big difference. But they're hanging right in there. You know, I think Kansas City has a half game lead because they haven't because they're on their bye week right now. But if the Chargers win this week, they can move actually back into first place, and I think that's turned into a really good battle. Denver doesn't seem to have staying power. We're seeing the Raiders kind of fade a little bit. I think it's going to be those two that determine the AFC West.
Yeah, and I mean, they beat them earlier in the year, right? I'm not
misremembering.
Okay, I thought so.
But they have one more game, so that'll probably be kind of the important.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the one thing that helps out the Chargers, too, is that one's at home. Like, they were actually able to go in and beat them and Arrowhead, so you've got a little bit of that confidence going. But, yeah, that's gonna be a big game because the Chiefs definitely look, as we mentioned earlier, a little bit better, even on defense. That could be a big, big game for the Chargers and possibly to win the AFC West, which is big because you get that home game, right? You don't want to end up as a wild card right now going into somebody else's house.
It's really only a couple weeks away. So the Chargers have at the Broncos, at the Bengals, home for the Giants, and then they have that Chiefs game.
That's not an easy schedule, though. I imagine Denver probably plays them tough with the way the Bengals have been playing. I mean, the only you would think win is going to be the Giants. So that, I mean, at least they get the Giants right before the Chiefs. So maybe that's a little bit nicer. Yeah, we'll see how good the Giants look now with the Clapper gone. I'm very curious.
Well, Freddie Kitchens is now their play caller.
You know,
mixed feelings probably for you.
Well, no, I will say this. As much as I disliked Freddie as a head coach, and again, small sample size because it was only half the year in Cleveland, I feel like he did a really good job calling plays that year. Again, Odell Beckham had 1,000 yards. That year as Freddie as a head coach, and the offense looked good. I mean, they made a playoff run in the back half of that season with Greg Williams as the head coach, and Freddie Kitchens was calling a lot of plays. I remember, I don't remember the exact stat, but I remember distinctly that they were like right with the greatest show on turf Rams in like yards per play that back half of the season because of how good that offense looked. And they have better weapons on that team. Chubb is actually playing. A lot of people may forget. Carlos Hyde was starting most of that season then before they let Hugh Jackson go. So they've got a lot of better players around him. I don't know why I'm talking about the Browns. Freddie's not with the Browns anymore. The Giants, I'm curious to see what he can do with them. But I actually think he could be a good offensive play caller. I mean, I think he's going to be better than Garrett. I don't really hate Jason Garrett, but just some of the stuff that he was calling, the things he was doing with those players just made no sense. They didn't really ever seem to want to get Kadarius Toney involved. Them trying to run Saquon up the middle on what felt like every single play. Like, I just think they needed a new voice in there, and I'm curious to see what Kitchens does with them. We're going to continue talking about that game, actually, because the Giants lost. They lost to the Buccaneers 30-10. Saquon returned. What did we think of his return, and where does he sit for you the rest of the season?
Yeah, you know, we knew it wasn't a great matchup. The Tampa Bay defensive front is very stout against the run. Like you said, not the greatest play calling. Yeah, I love the Giants. They score one touchdown, and of course it goes to tackle Andrew Thomas, helping everyone's fantasy fortune.
Yeah.
At least Saquon saw six targets. He was able to catch them all, didn't get a ton of yardage. I honestly thought he'd be a touch better in his return, but it wasn't that bad. And I think he goes back to being high-end RB2, low-end RB1.
Yeah, I think you can't drop him any more than that. I mean, he even admitted today that he was still struggling a little bit coming back. He wasn't 100%. I think we can give him a game or two. Plus, he went up against Tampa Bay, who's still one of the best rush defenses in the league. Like, he wasn't going up against the Jets or anything like that. So let's cut him a little bit of slack. I'm with you. I think, you know, he's still likely an RB1, at worst a high-end RB2. But I think at the end of the day, he's going to be an RB1. On Tampa Bay's side here, they get the big win. We saw Ronald Jones more involved. Do you think that this is a sign of things to come?
Yeah, I thought that was really frustrating because just about the time you're feeling good that Leonard Fournette is the guy and potentially a top 12 option, they not only put Ronald Jones in there, he's the one that gets the touchdown. I don't know what to make of it. It has seemed like for several weeks that he's sort of been in Bruce Arians' doghouse. I don't know if they're coming back. What's got to get you a little bit nervous as a fantasy player is we're getting closer to the stretch drive in the fantasy playoffs. And if this goes from a pretty clear-cut running back situation to more of the 50-50 toss-up we saw last year, that's going to be tough to plan for either one.
Yeah, and that's the worst part about it. I have a couple shares of Leonard Fournette, and I had been starting him because he's honestly been like a back-end RB1, high-end RB2, and seeing that last night was just frustrating. I mean, luckily for me, at least it didn't cost me any leagues, but it's just Bruce Arians doing Bruce Arians things. He's the Bill Belichick of the NFC. Once you think you have it figured out on the running back side, he switches up. Next thing you know, he's probably going to bring Ogunwale, how the hell you say his name, back.
I don't think he's on their team anymore.
But he will be soon. He's not, but he will be. That's my point.
Well, where you could get a Giovanni Bernard 23 carry feature game, or maybe Keyshawn Vaughn comes back from the dead and gets something more than a kickoff return. The only thing I could think is, are they, because they're such a heavy veteran team that looks like they're going to make the playoffs in an easier game, are they trying to keep Fournette fresh? Which from an NFL perspective, you're not upset about. But from a fantasy perspective, it's like, boy, I wish that I knew that was the strategy, you know, before I set my lineup.
Yeah, like even the Giovanni Bernard thing, like what if they used him like in two games earlier this season? The dude's been nowhere to be found. Like they signed him.
I don't know why they signed him.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for the Buccaneers. But hey, they're winning and they've gone all in for Super Bowl, and that's all that matters.
Yep. Well, we are just 2 days away from Thanksgiving. That's your warning. If you have not yet gotten your turkey out of the freezer, now might be the time to do that, unless you enjoy cold meat on Thanksgiving Day. But this Thanksgiving, you can be thankful for family, food, and free bets. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has a Turkey Day no-brainer you can't miss. New customers can bet just $1 on any Thanksgiving Day game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. So I would suggest betting on the latter two games, but any of those games should return for you. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the Thanksgiving NFL action. Make your first deposit, and you can play for millions in free bets with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code TPPN. Bet just $1 on any Thanksgiving NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That's promo code TPPN this Thanksgiving at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right. And continuing with the housekeeping here, come get yourself some of the Fantasy Football Roundtable merchandise. Just in time for the holidays, get your fantasy football gear at ViridianGlobal.com. We've got snapback hats, trucker hats, t-shirts, what are they called? They're not
three-quarter
called
sleeve.
No, are they called? They're called Henleys. The baseball Henleys. That's what at least that's what I call them. And my favorite, the hoodies, all adorned with our Fantasy Football Roundtable logo. Get 10% Fantasy Football Roundtable gear this week with our Black Friday code Roundtable. You can check that out again at ViridianGlobal.com. Go to the collections and search for Fantasy Football Roundtable and use code Roundtable, all one word, for 10% off. And Viridian's product is amazing. I have a bunch of, I'm actually wearing one of their other ones right now. I've got the Destination Devi stuff, Campus Canton stuff. I've got a couple of the Roundtable shirts as well. Great quality, feels amazing. I need to get myself some of the sweatshirts, so I don't have a sweatshirt yet. That's probably got to be the, I guess we're in winter, Texas. So. You know, but yeah, it's actually been like 30 degrees this morning.
A frigid 60 degrees. So.
I wish. It's been 30 degrees in the morning. I think we're supposed to get a cold front.
Yeah, the we're rest getting of this weekend as well. Front tomorrow, so you probably get it.
Yeah,
I think it's you're on Thursday. The like day and a half after. We're supposed to. Today is beautiful. It was 70 degrees, and they said tomorrow it's going to snow. I'm like,
yep,
that's about right.
Yeah, I think this morning it was 30, but then it's been in the 70s the rest of the day. Tomorrow the high of 75. And then Thursday through the weekend is supposed to be like highs of 30s. And I was like, cool. So, yeah, just in time to get that sweatshirt, I guess. I've got to get me one.
It's Thanksgiving. It's an indoor day. You know, usually Black Friday, don't they have some big college matchups? So.
Oh, the whole day is college football. I cannot wait. Yeah. We're going. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Gaylord Texan. I don't know. If
we're going to the Gaylord Colorado Springs.
I didn't know if Gaylord is like big everywhere. It's massive here. With like they've got a huge, very, very expensive bar. You know, we're already off topic, so I'm gonna spent a lot of money and a lot of good times there. Very one of my favorite places to go with Glass Cactus. But yeah, they've got a big Christmas celebration thing, so we're taking our kids there this week, and I'm excited about it. Build your own snowman, all that good stuff. So,
yeah, and we're gonna go see that they have a special Cirque du Soleil show.
We're
gonna go to that, and they have a special Elf interactive tour. We're gonna take that's the one day where you have to lay over in Denver between I have to go to California, we're visiting Lindsay's family, and then I have to go to Idaho for a family funeral. So, we're in Denver for one day, we're staying, we're hitting all those things, and then going back.
Yeah, we're getting we're doing like I forgot what it is, like an elf hunt, a scavenger hunt, something with Snoopy, and then we get they've got like I guess some kind of indoor like tubing and sledding thing, and then we get to build your own snowman and like some massive light show they have inside. My wife really wants to do so.
We'll have excited, to compare Gaylord experiences in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I will. We can definitely do that. I mean, it's a beautiful hotel. If it wasn't so, you know, made for the rich, I would probably do that all the time. But I did that a long time ago, like I guess it was kind of a long time. My 24th birthday, I think, me and a bunch of us went out. We stayed at the Gaylord. We ate at the Gaylord. We went to the Glass Cactus. It was rough looking at the bills the next day, but it was definitely an experience that I will not forget. So anyways, we're done with the football. If you guys are fans of Yellowstone,
in case you couldn't tell,
if you could not tell, we're done with football. If you guys are fans of Yellowstone and you have watched up until episode 4, stick around. If you have not, please leave. Not that there's many spoilers here that we'll probably talk about in episode 4. Not a lot of big stuff happened. I literally just finished watching it about 10 minutes before we started recording. But we are going to talk a little bit about that stuff again. I just found out the other day that Matt is a big fan of Yellowstone, as am I. So we're going to talk a little bit about it, which surprisingly, so have you been watching it from the beginning? Because I had seen the trailers for it and I'd never really gotten into it. And then I want to say, cause I got YouTube TV like 2 years ago. And then last year I was sitting, cause you know, COVID year, it sucked. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I saw on Paramount, because Paramount's on YouTube TV, they're like, oh, we're doing a Yellowstone marathon. I was like, you know what? I did kind of always want to watch that, so I just recorded the whole thing. And then I, like, binged all three seasons in, like, a week and a half, and then have been waiting a year for this season to drop. I could not wait, so.
You're not going to tell me. It's been, I think it was 18 months between seasons, and they left you with that finale where, like, everybody gets shot and or blown up. And I'm like, well, cool, cool.
Yeah, so let's go right there. What did you think of the premiere? It picks up virtually right after where the finale left off for season 3.
I'm glad none of them died, but also at the same time, a little bit surprised that no one. But I've said since the beginning, it's especially the way kind of the first season goes, and they have the older son who gets killed. I long felt that it was the cowboy version of The Godfather. So what it kind of felt like was, you know, every once in a while when somebody would line up and take a shot, and, you know, that when they took a shot at Vito, because, you know, I feel like Kevin Costner plays that kind of the Godfather role, and Casey is kind of Michael, you know, and they have their own family, Fredo. He's now the Attorney General.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was like, you comparing it to the Godfather makes me wonder, when are we going to get I know it was you, Fredo moment here for Jamie, especially with some of the stuff that we're
And that towards. that was the big thing in episode 4. We now know who went after the Dutton family. I don't know if you caught that when he was reading the list.
His father.
Yeah, his actual father. So literally, Jamie's gonna end up being responsible. So that's gonna be kind of a fun twist. But I like the acting. I like the setting. That premiere picks up, you know, really hot. That first, you know, 20 minutes or so, where, you know, they go and they find John and they pick him up, and you find out what happened with the explosion, and then Casey is going after the guys, and they have that huge shootout, and he's able to call, and they're going after his family at the ranch, and everything's going on. I had almost forgotten about Jimmy throwing himself off a horse until you see his crumpled body. I'm like, oh yeah, that dude. I feel like the show's more invested in him than I am as a viewer. They just keep bringing him up. There better be one hell of a payoff to this storyline, because they're spending so much time on it.
So Dutton talked about that, right, a little bit with he owes his grandfather, his father, a promise. And I'm very curious as to what his father meant to him then. And I feel like we're going to get that payoff eventually, because, they are spending a lot of time on
Jimmy. We better get a payoff.
With that, but I'm with you. The only one I thought might have actually died was Beth. I didn't think anything was going to happen to Casey. I mean, obviously, in the finale of season 3, all you really see for him is he flips the desk over, and then they come and start shooting, and it cuts it from there. You see Dutton get shot. You see, obviously, Beth gets blown up. I thought maybe she would die, because I did the same thing with that I do with all the Marvel movies. I saw the one trailer, and they talk about it's time to get revenge, but you never see Beth in the trailer. And so I really thought that was going to be them kind of like, hey, this is going to, you know, set Rip off into like a whole like frenzied killing spree and all this other stuff. But the fact that she survived, I guess, makes sense. Cause she, whoa, what are you doing? Sorry. My son just walked over here. I'm glad that she didn't die. Cause I find her very intriguing and somewhat fun character with the way that she handles things.
See, I wasn't as worried about her as much as I thought there was a low key chance that Kevin Costner, it's good because he's a pretty big star, and the rigors of doing episodic television, you know, it's not like he doesn't have other opportunities. And also, you know, I could have seen, it was almost a lot to believe that he survived that, because he got machine gunned out in the middle of nowhere. But I like how they took some time you know, they had to jump ahead and do the recovery. And but it, you know, after the intensity of that, it was the first two aired in a 2-hour block, and the first half they kind of deal with all that. After the intensity of that, it's not that the second episode wasn't good, but it was sort of a letdown. And I was kind of surprised at how quickly and nonchalantly they dispatched with Josh Holloway's character.
Yeah, I was not expecting that either.
What a way to go too.
Just was a rattlesnake, just rip, throws a rattlesnake into his face and gets bit dead. And I was just like, oh wow. Cause I'm not. So what's crazy about that is too, when that happened, I'm thinking, okay, they somehow figured out that I thought it was him who ordered the hit, which we can get into in a minute.
That's probably wasn't. Rip believes that he ordered the hit. And so now you have to wonder, is there going to be some repercussions for
him? Well, see, so they don't seem to care that he's gone. I mean, you have the new lady there, and I can't remember what her name is, but in episode 4, she approaches Beth to help Markwood Equities come take over. They don't seem to care that he's gone. Like, I have not seen any mention of him whatsoever, whether what happened to him, where he's at. So I'm curious if that will have any kind of, as you just mentioned, repercussions later in the season. I will say, I guess the one thing that works for him is that Rip literally just threw a rattlesnake on him. He's going to have a rattlesnake bite in the face. So they may think, oh, he was out fishing and somehow.
I'm sure they think that he died of natural causes, but
yeah,
it was just kind of weird. Josh Holloway has a decent profile as an actor, was on Lost and stuff. I'm wondering if he didn't want to do the show or they just decided they needed to go another way. It was just a very weird, after that much time was spent investing in building his character the season prior. You hardly see him in that 2 hours and then.
Yep, just right there. Yeah, I was kind of surprised. Like, I thought Rip was going to go down there and try and do something and get caught by the police or get shot or something himself, because he was kind of the only one who came away unscathed from everything. And then he just throws a rattlesnake in his face, and I'm like, oh, okay, so he's going to, like, torture him or something. Then it's like, oh, no, he's just going to die, just like that. Okay, end of the episode. Cool, okay. Yeah, I was not expecting that one bit. Let's see here. So let's save the hit on the Duttons part for the end here. We've already kind of hinted at some of that stuff. Yeah, we mentioned Casey. Obviously, he was in his office as a livestock commissioner when they came, but they also attacked the ranch. We saw Tate have to save his mom. Maggie shotguns a dude in the stomach. Good for him. That was a very happy moment for me because I thought something bad was about to happen. And we see that's clearly really affected both of them. Now, in episode 4, we see that Casey is kind of putting her and him ahead of his own family, ahead of the Dutton Ranch, and saying, hey, let's get out of here. Let's go close to the Indian Reserve. Let's kind of get you guys away from here. Do you think that he's going to be able to heal this like rift that's going on in his family?
Yeah, I really hope so. I like Casey and his wife, and I thought season 3 really kind of brought them together in a way that we hadn't seen. We've seen them struggle almost since the beginning with the back and forth, and of course remembering that at one point he killed her brother, which
was that like the fourth or fifth episode into season 1.
I've enjoyed their relationship. I've enjoyed the growth of her character. She had one of the best episodes in season 3 when she goes undercover to catch the guy that was preying on Native American women. And that scene where he got to be there for her because he understood what it was like to have to be there and to do those tough things. So she's always been a really strong character. I'm sure she'll bounce back. I thought it was beautiful too with him and his father when he said, I know how to fix it. I have an idea about how to fix it, but neither of us is going to like it. I thought we saw, in the past, Kevin Costner's character has been a little more upset when Casey won't come and stay. And he tried to make it feel like home for them, giving them the house and kind of a realization to him that they couldn't make that home, but that he needed to do what was best for his family, because I think family is their most important thing. And I think that led to a really tough but honest chat between John and Beth, where she said, this place is never safe, which is fine for you and Casey because you enjoy the chaotic, but nobody else can find peace here.
I love how that ended too, with the whole, because they have the man-to-man talks, and obviously she is his daughter, and her saying, I'm not going to say what she said. I'll just say, we need to get you a girlfriend. I'll put it the nice way of what she said, was just a very funny moment.
Which is weird, because he had that thing with the governor, and they never really resolved that, but it just sort of...
Yeah. She's like, seems just gone.
Oh, we decided we didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very interesting, too, with Casey, because, the entire first season, he's so hesitant to come back, and now he doesn't want to leave. I find that part just kind of very interesting, how he's really kind of come back in, and I like the fact that he's really kind of like, John Dutton has wanted him, his father wanted him to be this livestock commissioner, and he was kind of hesitant toward it. Now, he's really seemed to, enjoyed being part of that. I like him being that. It seems like he really enjoys it, so I'm with you. I hope they can't, because I like Maggie a lot as well. I feel so bad for Tate, because that poor kid has just been through the ringer.
Kidnapped.
Had
to kill a man. And he's only supposed to be, 10? His mom was giving him a bath, washing his hair. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's not supposed to be that old.
Yeah. So it's crazy that kid has had to go through so much. So I'm with you. I really hope, because I, like I said, when that stuff happened on the house, and we had seen, obviously, or no, we didn't know at that point in time that Beth had survived. Like, I really thought that they were going to hit home and take like a couple characters in that first episode and just kind of really bring home like, this is what happens when, because again, we thought it was market, or at least I thought it was Market Equities that put the hit out on him. So
I think everybody wanted you to think that. I also worried like the back half of the pilot. My other complaint about the second episode would be you don't see his wife and Tate. I thought maybe that she left him. You know, because Casey, yeah, the so first time you see Casey, when his father comes back, he's like dressed in military, laying out there, like part of the grass out there. And I was like, oh, his family left him and he ain't doing so hot. And then later it's like, oh, no, they're still there. I'm like, oh, okay.
So I don't want to break off that really quick, but Matt, only one of your comments came in and it says, or any other suggestions. So I'm not sure what the other, or what your question was, if you could repost it, if you're still watching, because I don't, for some reason, the only thing popping up on my side is, or any other suggestions. So I'm not sure what the first comment was. So I guess we can dive into the hit on that, or actually let's save that for a minute and let's talk a little bit more about Jimmy. It doesn't seem like either one of us really cares about the journey that he's on. I will mention that I do think it's kind of cool that they talked about the King Ranch, because that is a massive deal down here in Texas. And he in the show has now come down here to, as John Dutton put it, make a man out of him. And, you know, when he's ready to come back, he'll know whole thing. So he is now in Texas trying to learn how to be a cowboy, I believe is what they have him doing. Do you really care about what's going on with him?
Yeah, that's probably been a little bit of the struggle for me is he's never been my favorite character. There were times when I thought his story was a little bit more interesting, but they're spending so much time on it and they've spent so much time on it that there better be one heck of a payoff. That's all I'm going to say. Like, yeah, I'm not that invested, but now I'm kind of curious.
I'm right there with you, and I see Matt. Give us one second. Let me finish this sentence, and we'll jump into that question. I'm with you on that. Again, I like that they're bringing in like different real life big name ranches, like the King Ranch, because again, as he mentioned it, and he is not joking, everybody down here has those trucks with the King's Ranch on them. Like, it's ridiculous. So I think that's cool that they're branching off. We saw the payoff as well. John wanting to get into horse trading, and we already saw the payoff of that at the end of episode 4. So I'm interested to see where that goes with Jimmy and what the payoff is, as you mentioned. So Matt asks, do you like the Bears defense versus the Lions or the Eagles defense versus the Giants this week? I will take... It's actually a good question.
I'm going to say I'm on the Bears because it's looking like Tim Boyle is tracking to play again. And I know.
Campbell said today that Jared Goff is likely going to be the starter. He just said before we went on.
Because I was thinking how sad Thanksgiving is going to be, even with Jared Goff. Detroit plays better on Thanksgiving Day. New offensive coordinator for the Giants is going to want to try to go out hard. I think I'm taking the Bears.
I could see the Eagles having the better day because of what you just said, but I don't think Freddie Kitchens is a bad play caller, and I think he's going to open things up a little bit more than Jason Garrett was a very conservative play caller, and he called plays for the offense that I don't think is what the Giants are. I could see Freddie Kitchens opening up the playbook a little bit like he did with Baker. And if that's the case, I actually think the Eagles might have a little bit of a game on their hands. So, yeah, I would take the Bears as well. I just think even with Goff there, I think that the Bears will have a better day.
Overall. Well, the Giants have a better offense. They, you know, they have Kenny Golladay, you know, who's – and they have – it looks like Sterling Shepard may – be able to come back and play. They have Kadarius Toney. They have Saquon Barkley. I mean, they have a better offense.
I don't know about that either. Pittsburgh looked really good again. I mean, Los Angeles, I think the Bengals defense is better than the Chargers, but Pittsburgh looked good Sunday night with Big Ben back. I don't know that I would trust them.
I'm still doing Bears against the Lions over all those because I think Pittsburgh has a better offense and New York Giants have a better offense than the Detroit Lions.
All right, so we discussed the Jimmy thing, and now let's jump into the hit on the Duttons. We both mentioned we thought it was Marquette Equities, who they're kind of going up against at the end. It looks like Jamie had turned against the family in the finale of episode three, or I'm sorry, season three. Come to find out, he's actually been helping the family this entire time with leasing the land and not selling it. Beth is convinced that Jamie is the one who has betrayed the family a la Fredo. But it looks like it is actually his father. As you catch at the end of the episode, he was once a prison cellmate of, I don't remember the prisoner's name, but he was once a cellmate of the guy who supposedly ordered the hit on the Duttons.
Yeah, and we remember that John was responsible for putting him in prison in the first place and taking Jamie. That was kind of the big reveal last year. Jamie looked shaken when he came across that name. The question is going to be where it goes, because he seemed to lean into this idea that he has now his real father and has been taking that advice and trying to set that up. But you saw how moved he was when Casey came to him and told him he loved him and cared about him and told him, you know, Dad asked you to do this and that you're family, and how much that still means to him. That's probably what I would think a crux of this season is going to be about, the battle for the soul of Jamie. You know, is he going to go with his father and go against the Duttons who raised him, or is he going to go with the Duttons and go against his birth father who's kind of popped up and tried to be in his life? Because certainly a showdown is coming.
Yeah, it sure looks like it. You know, I mentioned with you off air that, and I don't know why, I have a thing for like these tragic characters. I kind of like Jamie's character. I think that he's very bullied upon. He is a little bit selfish, but I don't think that, you know, me and my wife are talking about this because she's kind of gotten into the show a little bit, and we watched a little bit at the end of season three and then a couple of season four, and she didn't understand why Beth hates Jamie so much. So I explained to her and I was like, you know, what he did was not like meant to be as bad as it was for Beth. In my opinion, I think he was trying to do what was best for his sister and keep her out of, you know, out of trouble and out of the local hospitals, and ended up causing her something that she eventually wanted in the future. And so she hates him for it. But I'm with you. I think that's what's going to line up to do. I think it was a really powerful moment though for him to, because Casey clearly lied to him, but he doesn't know that Dad wants you to do this because he wanted Casey to be the one in there doing the interview. But he told him that, and you could see like how proud Jamie was in that moment to be, okay, Dad wants me to do this, and how quick he was like, I'll do it. And I think that that is huge. And I think that's really going to be interesting how the rest of that plays out with him. And then obviously his real father, who is staying at home, you know, at the new house that he just bought, and how that may all add up. I almost wonder if that's a little bit of a red herring though, because I don't know that his dad would put out a hit like that quickly after getting out after meeting Jamie. And because, I mean,
it makes sense though, because he was agitated with John Dutton before. Remember back in season three, they had kind of those issues with the cattle and the border dispute. I mean, he's been agitating against John in the past, and they had that confrontation where John went and saw him in a diner and basically intimated that he would kill him. So it would actually make some more sense that guy is the one that put a hit out on the rest of them to get rid of them so that he can control his son, and probably sees it as a chance to control that fortune. Because if all the rest of them went down, Jamie would be the last man standing to inherit everything.
That is true. I'm very curious to see how that works out with them. I don't know that he did. I turned it off before we get to the previews of next week's episodes. I don't want to get anything ruined. That. So I don't know exactly what it seems like it's leaning toward. Obviously them doing something with the prison thing. So I don't know if we'll find out anything next week or if they'll extend that a couple episodes, but that looks like that part at least is going to be coming to a head at some point in time. All right. So last but not least, let's power rank the top three Dutton family power rankings, your top three characters.
So number three for me is going to be Rip. You know, I just love him and go. And this was hard because there's a big one that I didn't make into my top three that that I still love. There's so many characters I like, but he ends up coming in three for me. Number two for me is Beth. My God, she has some fantastic lines. That scene where she goes to meet with the market equities people and like the one guy pulls away just totally revolted. You know, just her whole demeanor, it's hard not to love. And Kelly Riley does such a great job in that role. And then number one for me is Casey. I've loved him since the beginning. I liken it to The Godfather. You know, The Godfather is really the story of Michael Corleone. I think this is really about Casey. I think by the end, it's handing off. And I think he's the one that's going to end up in some kind of position of power.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I can't remember what his name is. I actually really like the oldest son, and I hated that he went so quickly. Like, I really like this character.
Like in the pilot.
He literally died at the, I believe it was the end of the pilot. And you're just like, because he clearly seemed to be one, like, I don't know that, it really seems like Casey's kind of always been John's favorite, but he really seemed to, and I can't even remember his name off the top of my head, but he really seemed to love him as well. And then, but I'm with you. I think actually Beth is my favorite just because of how, like, I wish I could act like her sometimes, but she just has no fucks to give for anybody but herself. I love that. Number two for me is Rip. I love them as a couple. Rip is a guy that I just think he, the second chance that he's gotten, and I really, like, for me, two very powerful moments, and I think it was the season two when he agrees. I thought he was going to die when he says, you know, like he has that moment with John where John's like, "You've always been like a son to me," and he's like willing to get up on the horse and be the guy who charges the trailer so that they can go save Tate. And I thought that was going to be the end of him. That was a real emotional moment for me because, you know, he's grown up idolizing John as a father figure because of the way that his father was, and to kind of get that recognition. And then obviously in season three as well, to get the approval to marry Beth, I thought was just a really cool thing. I love those two as a couple. And then three for me is Casey. Cause I mean, there's really not any other characters. Like, I really like Jamie, but like, I wouldn't put him as like a power character in there with kind of the way he is. He's a little bit of the opposite of that, but I love like the tragic part of his character. But I mean, like, can't put Lloyd up there. I don't really like Walker. He kind of annoys me. I'm curious as to what happens with him at some point. Don't really like Jimmy. I like some of the other cowboys, but we don't see enough of them. So yeah,
I feel like the show likes Jimmy more than we like Jimmy.
Yeah, that's probably very true. All right. So I think,
it feels like it's a big thing for Taylor Sheridan though to cast a pretty well-known actor. I was trying to look it up and found it to play a character, and you see them and that's part of what draws you in. And then you watch the pilot and they're gone. I don't know if you saw that show Kingstown. He created a new show called Kingstown, which launched last week with Jeremy Renner. There are like four pretty famous actors that they name check as being in this, and like in the pilot one of them's gone, and I was like, god damn you,
wow. Yeah, so it's Lee is the son's name. I just typed in who are the Dutton sons, and Jamie and Casey are on there, and it's Lee and Beth. So Lee has got to be the one who passed away. Yeah, yeah, but he is a big name actor. He's been in a lot of shows and he's been in a couple movies. So yeah, I was with you. I was kind of surprised when I was like, wow, okay, like they're he's gone. Like, first episode, killed by what ends up being Maggie's brother, too, which I was just kind of like, oh, wow. Like, I was not expecting that. I thought that was going to cause more issues. So, well, yeah, it did for Casey. Casey ends up going and killing him because of that. So, yeah, no, yeah. I have not got a chance to watch that yet. I want to so bad, but I don't have Kingstown. A Paramount Plus. Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. So, last thing before we get out of here. We did get a glimpse of 1883, the spinoff. It is the origin story of Yellowstone. It's of the Dutton family. It looks like before they take over Yellowstone and possibly maybe a little bit after and whatnot. What are your thoughts on that? Curious if you're interested in it, what you think.
Yeah, I am interested. That's probably another reason you're going to have to go get Paramount Plus, because that's going to be exclusive to Paramount Plus too. But I also was, I thought it was funny the way they managed to tie it into the current, you know, because it seemed like a little bit of a non sequitur, and you knew they were throwing it into the pilot for, or into the premiere of Yellowstone so that people would get hyped for the new show. I like that Tim McGraw and Faith Hill are in it together as husband and wife. I saw more of an extended trailer. I thought it looked pretty good. I'll be curious to see. It looks like that's right when they were settling and forming the ranch, you know, see what that's like. But it was cool because the interaction that he has with them is with the Native American tribe, and they're there. He wants to bury his father, and he's like, sure, you can do it. Don't tell me where it is. And then cut to where they're trying to dig for the airport, and they find a body. I 100% think it's going to be a callback to that, and I thought it was cool. They found an organic way to make that matter to the current series.
Yeah, I am as well, just because I like the I like the series overall. I'm not, you know, I'm curious as to like what, because what it's Tim McGraw, right? Or who's yep. the actor? Who's
Tim McGraw?
Curious as if he's going to be good at all in that. I think the only other movie I've ever seen.
He's been a good actor in. He's done quite a few things where he's been good. But Sam Elliott's in this too, who's an incredible actor yeah. and really great in westerns too.
Yeah, there's a lot of decent names in this. So yeah, I'm curious to see it too, because I like the story. I want to see how the ranch kind of came to be and everything. So I will definitely give it a shot and see what it is. And I definitely want to check out, as you mentioned, Mayor of Easttown as well. Because I mean, I'm just a Kingstown. Massive fan of Jeremy Kingstown. I'm sorry. I was getting Mayor of Easttown stuck in my head with Mayor of Kingstown.
Well, so. And that's been the big joke, is Mayor of Kingstown is like the white dude version of Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, nice.
I don't know gotcha. If it's quite the same. I thought that was an unfair comparison, but yeah, I love Jeremy Renner too.
Yeah, same. So. He's an amazing actor. So yeah, I'll have to get Paramount Plus just for that. So, all right. So that'll do it for us today. Matt, myself, and Dennis will be back tomorrow to preview the entire week 12 NFL slate. We'll probably be live a little bit later than normal. Dennis is, taking his son on a university trip to the Ohio State to possibly see if he wants to enroll there. So it's a big, big moment for Dennis and his son. So we're going to allow them that great father-son moment. We'll go.
Does he play quarterback? Because they need one of those, right? I mean, they don't have any.
No, see, you know what? We'll talk. We'll talk to you guys later. Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow, everybody. So just watch the Twitter page at RoundtableFF. We'll talk about it there. But until then, everybody enjoy the day. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Prepare for glory! I don't know if you got your popcorn ready. Do you got your popcorn ready? I came out the womb, I was ready. And he's hit the end zone for an unbelievable touchdown.
I would be honored if you played football for this team.
Throw it up above his head. They can't jump with me. Golly!
Only tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Who can make a play? I can! Who can make a play?